Fading Voices by Boleslaw Prus, in a translation by Christopher Kasparak. Having returned whole from the fifth military campaign of his life, the colonel, at the end of 1871, resigned his commission and settled in Lyon. He was only 65, and looked so hale that his friends urged him to marry. But the colonel did not want to marry. He said that it's true his legs were still strong, but he had become bored with the France of the lawyers, and he was thinking of returning to his own people. And en route, with a woman, he would have a lot of trouble. He wanted to leave at once. He actually began seeking a buyer for his house and garden. Meanwhile, three of the colonel's compatriots and comrades from his very first campaign had arrived in Lyon. The veterans easily found one another, still more easily renewed their acquaintance, and henceforth went about as a foursome. Desiring to drink black coffee together at a Polish cafe, they had to lunch together at the same restaurant. Then each might go wherever his eyes took him, so long as he reported in time for the session of whist. However, since delays would occur, for the sake of order they watched one another, and went about together all day, sometimes in twos, sometimes single file, but usually abreast. Their main occupation was conversing about old military campaigns and current politics. Over a year's time, the old soldiers discovered all the errors of Kossuth, MacMahon, Bazaine, and earlier commanders. And the following year, they drew up war plans so astute that, had they been executed, the world would have been a far different place. In the third year, one of them died. They mourned him as a brother. But a month after the funeral, they decided that the dead man's politics had harboured a great flaw, for Bismarck, though a German, was nevertheless a genius, and who knew but he might yet be of use. In the fourth year, a second comrade died quite unexpectedly. The colonel took to his bed in distress, and henceforth did not play whist with his remaining colleague, but only marriage. The old boys now spoke less with each other, but they read more newspapers. And having looked about them and combined what the English dailies wrote with what sometimes appeared in the German ones, they concluded that Bismarck was not at all as bad as he seemed, but that he must be cautious.
"In politics, my dear captain," said the colonel, "the prime virtue is caution, no doubt about it."
"I've always been of that opinion, my dear colonel," replied the captain. "As you may recall, I've often defended Bismarck."
"Actually, you've more often said that he was a scoundrel."
"Me, colonel? It was that late Kadelski, but mainly Demejko, God rest their souls." Then he added, "True, they were good officers, but neither had a head for politics, even if they have both been called to God's judgment."
Finally, of a certain winter, the captain died. For the nonce, the colonel showed no grief. He saw to the funeral and arranged for it to be worthy of an officer of two armies. He did not shed a single tear, but when at the graveside there rang out the infantry's salvos of farewell to his colleague, the old man suddenly reeled and fell, as though all the shots had been aimed at his chest. They barely brought him back to his senses. For a few minutes he rested, then, without anyone's help, he got into a fiacre and rode home. Next day, an ad appeared in the local newspapers announcing that the colonel's house was for sale. A buyer was found quickly, and a week later the old man was preparing to take leave of hospitable France forever.